And then there were eight. Rugby World Cup 2023 has entered the knockout stages. We started with 2012 teams are out. And after this weekend's final round of pool stage fixtures, we now know our eight quarterfinalists and our four quarterfinals. This is the Inside Pass. Welcome back to News24's dedicated daily Rugby World Cup podcast. I'm joined in studio again by Herman Mostert. Morning, Herman.
Good morning, Lloyd.
How are we doing?
Great, thanks.
Good weekend.
Good rugby weekend, yes.
Yep. We've got Wales, Argentina, England, Fiji, Ireland, New Zealand, France, South Africa as our four quarterfinals in Rugby World Cup 2023. Largely going, I think, expected to, you know, predictions that were made before the tournament. The obvious upset being, you know, Fiji sneaking into those quarterfinals ahead of Eddie Jones's Wallabies, who are on their way home. Geez, two huge blockbusters, one on Saturday at 9 o'clock, Ireland, New Zealand, one on Sunday at 9 o'clock, France against the Springboks. Did the quarterfinals pan out the way you thought they would in terms of who's playing?
Well, in terms of before last weekend, yes, you would have expected, I didn't expect Fiji to lose to Portugal, but even if they had lost, you would have expected him to get at least the one losing bonus point that they did get, which knocked Australia out essentially because they'd beaten them head to head. But these four quarterfinals, the two main ones, obviously Ireland playing New Zealand and South Africa playing France, that sounds or it looks a bit more like two semifinals than two quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Obviously because of the lopsided way that the draw was made. Mm. Obviously the draw was made some years back when the rankings were different. Luckily that's going to change in future now. You would have to think that the winner of the tournament is going to come out of those two blockbuster quarterfinals. No disrespect to Wales and Argentina, but they haven't really looked, none of those two teams have looked like world beaters or world champions for that matter. And then England, Fiji, another interesting quarterfinal, two teams that started in the last round of matches. England probably lucky to beat Samoa by 1 point. Mm. And it was strange for me to see the English celebrate after beating Samoa by 1 point as if they've won some sort of title or something.
A win is a win is a win.
Yeah. And then obviously Fiji struggling against Portugal. You know, they also struggled against Georgia in the previous game where they trailed 9-0 at halftime. So it seems to me like Fiji looked like a team that they like being the underdogs. They don't like this favourites tag that was suddenly thrust upon them after beating Australia and also running Wales close.
Yeah.
So, maybe this weekend they'll be underdogs again against England. So maybe that'll suit them again and they can cause an upset, if you can put upset in quotation marks, maybe.
You've got to be smiling if you're Wales and England, if you think about how much those two nations have struggled in the build-up to the Rugby World Cup. I mean, just given absolutely no chance, but, you know, as you said, because of the draws, now in a quarterfinal, looking at two very winnable games, both of those sides, Wales against Argentina, will fancy their chances. Wales have actually improved as the tournament's gone on, not looking too bad at all, and England against Fiji. I mean, for two teams that have struggled that badly in the build-up to a Rugby World Cup to be, you know, within touching distance of a semi-final is quite something. But I want to talk about that Fiji game that we saw yesterday. It was the game that brought the curtain down on the pool stages. And for me, just one of the performances of the World Cup so far. I mean, Portugal just absolutely immense in landing their first Rugby World Cup win. There was a lot on the line for Fiji. They needed a losing bonus point at the very least to qualify for the quarterfinals, which they got. But at certain stages in that game, I mean, you could almost just picture Eddie Jones and the Wallabies in a hotel room somewhere, starting to believe. Because, I mean, Portugal a couple of times in the game was 7 points up and actually in the ascendancy, looking a far better outfit than Fiji in many times. I mean, they just played, you know, with so much energy and passion, and defensively there was just so much fearlessness in the way they did absolutely everything. You know, no chance of qualifying for Portugal in this game, obviously. But just a historic first Rugby World Cup win was all the motivation they needed and really delivered one of the gutsy Rugby World Cup displays, I feel. I mean, that try to win it at the end and the celebrations that we saw coming through the footage. I mean, the players were almost in tears. It meant that much to them. When the final whistle goes, the coach is almost in tears. The fans, that crowd was just electric throughout. And, you know, that's really what it's about. We spoke about the Minnow Nations last week and finding a way to get Rugby World Cup more competitive. But when you see a day like this and what it meant to an emerging rugby nation like Portugal, then it's difficult to find fault in the format currently. And, I mean, the Rugby World Cup has an ability to do this for these teams and give them this kind of platform. I mean, what did you make of that Portugal day? It was really just magic.
Yeah, like you said, they were leading 17-10 at one stage deep into the second half, and it looked like they were a bit in the ascendancy, and if they'd gone ahead by another score, then Fiji were, as it stood, would have been out because they had to get at least a losing bonus point, and then they would have been chasing the game. But yeah, like a very passionate performance, like you said. It shows, you know, almost you can almost say they played above themselves, you know,
yeah.
Probably better than what they are. But, I mean, they're definitely a success story for this World Cup. Obviously, they drew against Georgia earlier in pool play, which was also an upset because Georgia were expected to beat them quite comfortably. Mm. And they had a kick actually at the end to win it, which they didn't kick over.
Yeah.
So, for them, a very successful World Cup. And so, obviously, that's a case to be made for a Minnow, very much a Minnow team or Minnow nation coming through and performing that well. It wasn't like a blowout score like we saw in some of the other pool games.
Yeah, they were also very competitive against the Wallabies.
Yes.
Yeah.
The previous week. So, yeah, look, definitely scope for that. We were probing last Friday whether maybe the tournament should have maybe two divisions or maybe fewer teams or going back to the 16 team, but that would then mean teams like this wouldn't be there, you know,
and they won't have days like this, you know. I mean, if they were separated from days, I mean, geez, even the Samoa game, you know, I mean, Samoa out as well, but I mean, for large portions of that game against England, you know, standing on the verge of an upset that would have really, you know, salvage their tournaments and let them leave with their heads held high. So, I mean, even when we have the top tier nations playing the smaller nations, you still get those days where it just looks like anything can happen.
Yeah, look, I mean, Samoa, it was basically a yellow card towards the end of the match that actually cost them, which I guess they're pretty prone to if you look at their history. But that's another example of a team that would have probably not been as massive an upset. I think Portugal beating Fiji is even probably more of an upset than it would have been if Samoa had beaten England, even though from an historical perspective, it would be a massive upset for Samoa to beat England. But I mean, England, they're not the strongest England team at the moment, and they lost to Fiji obviously before the tournament at Twickenham. So that, looking here to the quarterfinal, you know, England now probably going to be out for revenge. But as I said, Fiji now will be the underdogs again, especially after losing to Portugal, and England probably performing better in this World Cup than many people thought they would.
Yeah.
So maybe that's going to help Fiji again, you know, being the firm underdogs for that game. Or maybe not firm underdogs, but underdogs, certainly.
What do you think it is about that Fiji side? Because throughout the World Cup, we've seen them perform very, very well when their backs are against the wall. Yeah. And even in their opener against Wales, you know, it took them going down for them to find that extra gear and come back into that game. We saw them deliver a superb performance against the Wallabies for the win that ultimately separated them from the Wallabies in this pool and got them through in the end. But then even against Georgia, as you said, down, backs to the wall, had to fight back from behind. And then now against Fiji, down. It seems like this weird dynamic where even if you look at the opposition they play, Fiji are playing, as you said, a top tier side where they enter as underdogs. They almost fancy that a bit more, it seems, from the outside looking in, than when they play someone that they're expected to win. I mean, they were not good yesterday in many, many departments. Yes, Portugal were very good defensively. I mean, Fiji at one stage were throwing absolutely everything at them, bashing away phase after phase in their 22, and the Portuguese defense held out, which is credit to them. But there were also parts in that game where Fiji were quite careless with ball in hand, where they'd make a break, and then, you know, handling would let them down, or a straight pass would happen. Their set piece was letting them down at line-out once or twice in key moments. You know, not really the kind of clinical calm display that you need in a moment like that. I mean, there was no ways going into this that Fiji would flirt with elimination. Yet, as that game progressed, it started to look, you know, likely more than once. And what do you think it is? I mean, that's something they're going to have to, you know, get right for the quarters.
I think it's just they're probably not used to that. Not used to playing test rugby where they are the firm favourites, I guess. You know, they're always up against it.
Yeah.
And I guess it suits the sort of the style that they play. They almost like play with a little bit like they have a chip on their shoulder, you know, with something to prove and you know, always being written off when they play against these bigger nations. And that's when they seem to thrive, you know. As you said, in that Wales game, they were three tries behind Wales at the end, and they almost won that game in the last 10 minutes if it wasn't for a drop pass out wide. And then they sort of, for the next week, everyone thought, yeah, but they lost to Wales, they're going to just get beaten up by Australia now, you know, they're not going to beat Australia. So they were written off again, and then they just took that momentum from the late charge in the Wales game into that match. And it was funny actually in that Australian game where they sort of completely dominated the Australians for the early parts of that match up until into the second half, and then the Wallabies almost came back at the end, and it's almost again like, okay, Fiji are now dominating, they're ahead, and then they get complacent again. Then yeah, they sort of, oh, we're actually going to win this, so now we're the favourites, and what do we do now? Then yeah, they sort of, I guess
does
they
feel like that.
They sort of wouldn't say they always lose their structure. They can lose their structure, but they're prone to making errors at set pieces, which is important, especially in these big games. And
yeah,
I think that could cost them in the knockouts now, again, especially against a side like England. England, not the strongest team in this tournament, but very good at doing the basics well. And I think that's probably what England will target, you know, playing a structured game, an error-free as much an error-free game. And yeah, so I think that's how England will go into that match, and then they would probably hope that Fiji would just make too many errors, too many basic errors. But it's going to be an interesting game nonetheless.
Yep, England-Fiji, the first quarterfinal on Sunday at 5 o'clock. That's going to be a good one. Let's talk about Ireland and Scotland. That was the other match, obviously, this weekend that commanded South Africans' attention, given the minute mathematical possibility of the Boks getting knocked out of the tournament. Scotland needed to win that game by 21 points with four tries, and Ireland needed to lose with the bonus, but there was just a lot at play there. It never looked like happening. I mean, Ireland just outplaying, out-muscling the Scots in absolutely every department, and cruising to a 36-14 win and stamping their authority, not only on Pool B, but, you know, I've seen a lot of commentary after that game going like, yo, given what we've seen in the pool stages, coming through against the Springboks, coming through against the plucky Scottish team, you know, Ireland are firm favourites to win this competition in the eyes of many. There was a lot of stuff said about Nick Berry's performance in that game, but really, I mean, it didn't matter who the referee on the day was. Ireland were that much better than Scotland that you could have put anybody on that field to referee and the result would have been the same, surely. I mean, you must have been very impressed with what you saw from the Irish.
Yeah, obviously, big statement made by Ireland. They scored inside the first couple of minutes. Sort of laid down a marker, and then I thought the next 15 minutes of that match was quite vital in the sense that the Scots were attacking close to the Ireland line for quite a concerted period. I think they had 16 phases of attack in the Irish 22 at one stage, and it just never looked like they could score. Like, the Irish defence was rock solid. It was almost like the game against the Springboks, where the Boks also started really well, had several chances in the red zone, and they didn't capitalise. And the Irish, I don't know if you saw, but every time they end with a defensive a period of defense where they win a turnover or they win a penalty, they celebrate almost like they've scored a try.
Yeah.
And that sort of shows a bit of the team, you know, the camaraderie that they have in the team. And and then obviously a massive statement. And then as soon as they got back into Scottish territory, they scored. And they had four tries. They made the statement mm-hmm. of already having the bonus point at halftime. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very clinical performance. They finished their chances and they had a resolute defence, mm-hmm. rock-solid defence. Their captain, Peter O'Mahony, said afterwards, he took a little bit of a dig at Scotland. He said the Scots had been talking in the week building up to the match that they'd almost figured out Ireland. In a sense, they hadn't beaten Ireland in eight matches before that, but they said they figured them out. And then he mentioned it in his post-game interview. And he said, well, bit of tongue-in-cheek, I guess. Well, I don't think they really figured us out tonight. You know? Not if you trail by 36 points. So that's as good as Ireland could have played. And well, for their sake, I hope that wasn't their World Cup final, because they're not going to be able probably to play much better than they did, especially for those first 60 minutes of that game.
Mahoney versus Duan Funamavo was also a nice little battle at one point of that game with a little scuffle. Yeah, and you had to feel for Scotland. I mean, just, you know, doomed from the start, really, with that pool. I mean, really, what were you, on paper and given the way they've performed over the last couple of years, you know, you would say, oh, one of the best Scottish teams to enter a World Cup, given what they've done. But, I mean, just getting drawn against, really, two of the tournament favourites in the same pool was incredibly unlucky for them. You know, if they were in either pool on the other side of the draw, you would have given them a fair crack at winning that pool, whether it was Pool C or Pool D. So just really the unlucky team of the tournament. Just on Bury, we're expecting either today or tomorrow, I'm not sure which day it'll come out, but the referees for the quarterfinals will be named. And that's obviously important. You know, I was lucky enough to do a book with Nick Mallett leading up to the tournament, and you know, it was a very clear theme from Nick speaking about his concern over referees and just how key refereeing will be in a South African context, specifically at this tournament, given a couple of reasons. You know, given the fact that Rassie's standoff with World Rugby did happen, that was very much centered around refereeing, that in the eyes of World Rugby, we might be a little bit in the naughty corner, given our behavior over the last couple of years, and what impact that might have. But more importantly, I think just the fact that it's, you know, Northern Hemisphere and a French hosted tournament, you know, we're playing against the hosts this weekend, and It's just a fact, Nick argues, that, you know, the home crowd historically does get the rub of the green when it comes to 50-50 decisions, because you don't want to do something that, you know, upsets that many people in a stadium. So who the referees is obviously important. The Bucks will have done their research on all the possible kind of, you know, match officials, but it's almost as important as how you prepare for the team, you know, from a tactical and physical perspective. I mean, how big do you think the referee will be, particularly in the South Africa quarterfinal this weekend?
Yeah, I'm actually worried for the Springboks, because especially after watching Friday night's match between France and Italy, there was, I don't know if you recall, the first try that Italy scored, which was cancelled at the end, which was, should have actually been a try. It looked like a perfectly legitimate try. And it was cancelled, and it was cancelled for me. Basically, the crowd went absolutely ballistic.
Yeah,
the noise levels, you know, the constant howling, whistles were blowing, and I believe the officials were probably influenced by the crowd. You know, making a lot of those 50-50 calls went the way of France, the home nation, and yeah, you know, it's going to be an issue if the box play. It doesn't matter who the referee is. Subjectively, subconsciously, he could be influenced by that crowd. It's going to be a vociferously pro-French crowd, and those 50-50 calls, you know, could more often than not are going to probably go the home team's way. So if the Springboks will have to make sure that they build up a, wouldn't say a big lead, but pretty much a substantial lead. Maybe they're going to have to score a few tries. If it's a 1-2-3 point game, you know, it's going to be very tough for them to win, I think, because those calls could definitely be going in favor of France. I hope I'm wrong, but that's the way it feels for me at the moment.
Do you think the Springboks obviously will have had about a 10 or 11 day break, I think, by the time the quarterfinal takes place, because they weren't in round five group stage action because they had their bye. So they'll be a little bit more rested than France and the other quarterfinalists. Do you think that works in their favour? Does it give guys like Lucanio Am, Andre Pollard a bit more time in the system to build up fitness? Or do you think there's the danger of arriving a bit cold for that one?
I don't think it'll be a case of them arriving cold. I just don't think they'll have an advantage over France. I mean, France played on Friday night against Italy. It wasn't the most bruising match for them as well. You know, they ran riot in that game. I think it was the biggest win France have ever had over Italy. So I don't think it's going to give us any sort of advantage that we've rested. I think we must just make sure that we don't go into the game a bit cold, because we would have not played for 2 weeks, obviously, once the match kicks off. But I mean, the team is tournament battle hardened by now. You know, they've played four matches. They played a couple of warm up games before the tournament. So I don't think an extra week off is now going to make a massive difference in terms of them being undercooked. I don't think. But I don't think it's an advantage for the Springboks, just because they didn't play this last weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, France were playing against the All Blacks and they had three or four injuries and was a bruising game, or against Ireland or whatever, then it could have had an influence. But it, I mean, they won comfortably, and yeah. So I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think it's going to be level pegging in that regard, with obviously some other issues that could come into play.
Yeah. As we go through the week, we'll be looking at box selections and talking points around South Africa's game against France. But off the top of your head, Herman, I mean, I suppose the obvious selection decision, you know, I don't think, just having, you know, read some of Mzondile Stick's quotes in the media after over the weekend around Lukanyo Am, I find it unlikely that he will feature in this quarterfinal. It looks like it's more potentially a semi-final, you know, getting him off the bench or in a game there somewhere, maybe on the bench in a quarterfinal if it allows. But I don't see Lukanyo Am being in the starting lineup for this weekend, though I could be very, very, very wrong. And Rassi is very difficult to predict in these spaces. But the obvious talking point around selection has got to be a fly half where, you know, Andre Pollard played the last game against Tonga, looked quite good, stabled off the tee, consistent, experienced, a World Cup winner, or the attacking kind of, you know, spark and game management of Marnie Lebok. I mean, would you agree that that is the major talking point in terms of selection going into the weekend?
Yeah, and I think it's a tough selection call to decide whether to pick Pollard or Marnie. I mean, Marnie Lebok's played so well so far in this whole tournament, and I mean this season for the box. But yeah, there's obviously the issue of the suspect goal kicking. Although he got that right in the previous game where he kicked 3 from 3, so I think it's a tough call. I've got a feeling that they're probably going to go with Marnie because of what they had said beforehand. But I mean, I could be completely wrong. Like, it's so tough, like you said, it's so tough to read Rassi's mind. At least they've got both guys fit. I think that's, and if one doesn't play, the other needs to be on the bench. I mean, there's no question about that. So
yeah.
I think that makes the bench interesting. Also, I don't think they're going to pick Lukanyo Am to start.
Yeah.
Simply because he hasn't played rugby, you know, in a while. Mm-hmm. And he also wasn't playing that well almost before the injury as well. I don't feel he was at his best this season so far, actually. So the thing is, you could ask the question, are they going to try and maybe accommodate Am on the bench as an impact player, which would also be tough, but that would then affect whether they go with a 6-2 split on the bench or a 7-1 split or whatever. Maybe just go 5-3 again. Three. Because you probably wouldn't want only Am and Pollard on the bench or Marnie Lebok on the bench, because then you don't have that versatility almost. You know, they're sort of thinking maybe Willie Larue needs to be on the bench because he's more versatile
for
a player. Or maybe a Kane and Moody, you know, can play center and wing, maybe even fullback. So I think it's some tough calls to make. I think obviously the big talking point is who's going to start at fly half. And then what the bench is going to look like. I don't think the rest of the starting 15 is that tough for the coaching staff to make. But I think the bench it's going to be tough for them to decide who plays off the bench and how many forwards or how many backs.
Yeah.
Which would be interesting.
Yeah, I think the team picks itself for the most part. I mean, maybe Kane and Moody versus Kurtley Arendse for a spot on the wing, because Moody can cover other positions. Lebok or Pollard at fly half. And then I think the rest really picks itself. I think you've got to go Jesse Creel. He's played well, and you've got to keep backing him at 13. And then on the bench, 6-2 or 5-3, surely. You can't be
7-1 is a bit.
And if you want Lukanyo Am on the bench and you want to get him in, you know, he does cover wing as well.
Yeah.
But if you go, then Am has to be one player on the bench. Then you need Pollard / Lebok as the other player on the bench. Then you still need your scrum half. So, you know, you're looking at 5-3. So if they go 6-2, I don't see there being a spot for Lukanyo Am on the bench. This and more will be discussed as we build up to what is just an absolutely massive Rugby World Cup quarterfinal on Sunday. Hosts versus champions France against the Springboks. This has been the Inside Pass. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to check out News24 Sport for all of our Rugby World Cup coverage. We'll keep bringing it to you throughout the week. Thank you so much for joining us. Cheers.
You are a